with too much of my own blood to see any of his. His memories were still jangling and clashing in my mind. He had come into this room alone before, without waiting for help, and that time he had been armed with a knife. A young man cowering on the mattress had bled out from twin long slashes down his arms, and his blood had seeped through the mattress and into the floor, drying in eerily red stains. For days afterward, the man had opened the door to check that his victim was still dying, and he had sat down cross-legged in the open doorway and whispered to himself, "He can't get out. He can't get out. He can't get out." It took a long time for the young man to die. "What?" Rain said. I was staring at the mattress.
"He was going to kill you. He's killed a lot of people."
Rain looked at me curiously, her beautiful amber eyes glittering in the candlelight.
"I kind of figured. But how did you know?"
"It's not paint," I said, too tired for sarcasm. "And it's not ketchup."
"No, come on. You've got something else. How did you know?" I shrugged.
"I don't know."
"That," she said, "is very interesting. But I don't think you're lying to me. I think you really are that clueless."
Another shrug. Rain reached out hesitantly, her palm open toward the wall.
She recoiled with an expression of distaste. "Still there. I could have told you that. I did tell you that. Him being..." She gestured vaguely. "Didn't make any difference. Is he going to wake up?"
The man's blue eyes didn't blink, didn't contract, didn't flinch when I snapped my bloody fingers in front of his face. I could barely stand to look at him. Something about his blank stare was so much worse than the man I'd left dead in the car beside a country road. Unfinished in a way that felt like an open wound, a gash that should have been cleaned but was instead left to fester. His face was rigid, not slack. Every muscle in his body had tensed as he fell. I didn't want to know what was happening behind his open eyes. I could still feel the oily cloak of his shadows, coiling and twisting like a knot of snakes. I had stripped some of those shadows away, but not all of them. He had killed so many people. I searched through his pockets. I found the key to the room, a phone, a wallet. Rain huffed in amusement.
"Are you seriously robbing a corpse?"
"Not a corpse," I said, but I was barely paying attention to her. He was 29 years old, not a registered organ donor. He had been sunburned the day they took his photo.
"Brian Kerr," I said.
Brian, the man Mr. Willow had been speaking to on the phone, if it even mattered. "Lives in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Maybe that's where we are." I set the wallet aside and picked up the phone, tapped the screen. No password protection. I looked at it for a few seconds before lowering it. I didn't have anybody to call. I didn't think this was a situation in which 911 would be appropriate.
"Do you have somebody you can call for help?" I asked.
Rain said,
"Slide it over here.
There's probably a GPS thing on there, to find out where we are."
Rain rolled her eyes. "Thanks, I never would have thought of that on my own." She spent a few seconds playing with the phone. "Jesus, we're in the middle of nowhere. I hate Wyoming. All the humans are crazy in Wyoming."
I crawled away from Brian Kerr's unconscious body, as close to the wall as I could get without feeling any worse than I already did.
"Do you know someone who can help?"
I asked again. Rain looked at the phone, looked at the stained mattress, looked at me. "How many people do you think he's killed here?" she asked. "I mean, right here, rather than taking them away."
"At least one. Somebody who took a long time to die."
The young man had been pleading for help long after any normal person, any human, would have bled out.
"Does it matter?"
"It matters what kind of blood they used," she said. She glared at the phone. Who the hell even remembers phone numbers anymore?
She shrugged and dialed, listened for a few moments.
Hey, it's me, Rain.
A brief pause.
Yeah, ask me if I care. I've been stuck in a... Just shut up and listen for a second, okay? I need your help.
She sounded chipper, cheerful even. No trace of fear in her voice.
Because you owe me. Do you remember what happened?
Yes, I am. I am absolutely using that. You owe me. I know you don't want anybody to know what happened. You think everybody's all welcoming and friendly in Boulder, but if they...
Her smile was sharp. I didn't even know you knew words like that. I ought to wash your mouth out with soap.
I need a ride. Another pause.
Not that far, just outside of Cheyenne.
It's in Wyoming, asshole. The big square north of the big square you live in.
No, it's not. It's not that far.
She rattled off an address, repeated it patiently, and said, Write it down, and hurry. She hung up and set the phone on the floor beside her. She hadn't said a word about me.
It will be a couple of hours, she said. He's coming up from Boulder.
He can help?
You stay over there. Don't get me wrong. That was kind of badass. But I don't want you near me.
Fine. Are we getting out of here or not?
I think so. This room looks pretty old, but if I'm right... Ghouls aren't good for anything else, but they're pretty useful for breaking through magical shit like this.
Ghouls. Awesome. Another one for the real side of the list.
Rain nodded at the unconscious man on the floor. Will he wake up?
I don't know.
You don't know anything, do you?
No, I said. I really don't.
The man didn't wake up. He didn't make a sound. He didn't blink. He was breathing, and he had a pulse. But nothing else about him changed. Not one thing.
Chapter 18. Brian Kerr is still alive. He's at a hospital in Cheyenne, hooked up to machines that monitor his heart. He breathes on his own. They feed him through a tube. He is unresponsive to stimuli. The news article said he played football in college and studied communications, and he was married to Barbara Rice of Cody, Wyoming. He told her he was helping a friend fix up an old house to sell. When he didn't come home and didn't answer his phone, she drove out to check on him. An article from his hometown newspaper said, Longtime residents of the county might remember Kerr as one of the survivors of the Windy Ridge Boy Scout Camp animal attack 15 years ago, during which four boys were mauled to death by an unidentified animal. Probably a bear. Never confirmed. That would have been how Mr. Willow found him and drew him in.
I know you saw something in the woods that night. I know you know it wasn't a bear. Nobody will believe you.
The articles also said, Due to evidence found at the scene, Kerr is now a person of interest in several open cases, including a series of disappearances spanning six states.
He's still alive.
I added him to my list anyway. Brian Kerr, mass murderer. None of the news sites mentioned that he had been found in a room painted with blood.
Chapter 19. That woman, Rain said. She hadn't spoken for so long the sound of her voice was a surprise.
Which woman?
The one that was here before you. She was looking for her kids. That's how they got her. Rain was sitting on the floor with her legs stretched out in front of her. She thought these people took them.
The children on the playground. Blank faces turning to watch as Violet and I walked by.
Rain said, They took her away. That guy and one of his friends. Dragged her out of here. Guess she's never getting a chance to find her kids. You're not bleeding anymore.
No. I touched my hand to my neck. The furrow left by the shotgun pellet was scabbed over, the skin already knitting itself together. It was healing much faster than Lyle's cuts on my side.
"That should have killed you," Rain said. "Point blank with a shotgun."
He missed.
"You are so full of shit."
After a while, I noticed a change in the light through the open door. Dawn had come, and somewhere in the house, beyond that barrier we couldn't cross, morning sunlight was filtering through unblocked windows. Not long after sunrise, Rain looked up and tilted her head to the side.
"Someone's here."
Her ears were sharper than mine. A full minute later, I heard a car approaching. Tires crunched over gravel. The car creaked as it stopped and the engine cut out. A door slammed.
"Is that your friend?" I asked.
Rain walked to the doorway and leaned close to see down the hallway. For a few minutes, we didn't hear anything else. No doorbell, no knock. Then glass broke somewhere in the house. I jumped, startled, and Rain laughed. There was a muffled curse and footsteps in the hallway. The word ghoul had made me imagine a creature with gray skin and yellow teeth and dangling rotten bits, somebody old and crooked and grotesque. But the person who came for us was a tall, skinny kid with brown hair and brown eyes. He looked human, maybe some Middle Eastern or Arab blood in his family history. No older than 16 or 17.
"Took you long enough," Rain said. "You woke me up at 3 in the morning and made me drive all the way to Wyoming, and you're complaining about how long it took?"
the boy said. He wasn't smiling.
"Who's that?"
"We don't know the dead guy. The other one is Breezy," Rain said.
"At least she says that's her name. I have my doubts.
Breezy, Zeke, Zeke, Breezy. Don't let her touch you."
"Why not?"
The kid wasn't particularly alarmed by the warning. Rain pointed at the unconscious man on the floor.
"She did that," she said.
I pressed my hand over the aching gashes in my side and tried to look harmless. "It was an accident," I lied. "He's not dead." Zeke gave me a quick look, then reached out tentatively to touch the doorframe.
"What did they use for this?"
"The blood of 100 virgins, Rain said.
"Who knows? Who cares? What are you— Don't!"
He stepped through the doorway, made a face like he was smelling something gross, and stepped back out. He was only in the room for a second, but it was long enough for me to feel his brief, shifting shadow. He was a killer.
"That was stupid," Rain snapped. "You could have been stuck in here with us."
"No, I couldn't."
"You don't know that."
"You wouldn't have called me if you thought it would work on me."
"Maybe I called you because I don't know anybody else stupid enough to come. Can you break it?"
Instead of answering, Zeke ran his fingers gingerly over the wood of the doorframe, touching it lightly, like he expected it to be damp and sticky rather than long dried.
"Maybe," Zeke said.
He turned and disappeared into the house.
Rain called after him. "Where are you going?"
A storm door clapped shut elsewhere in the house. Rain rolled her eyes.
"I hate ghouls."
"Know a lot of them?" I asked. What I really wanted to know was why the only person she could call for help was a teenage boy. But I was pretty sure she wouldn't answer. She shrugged.
"No, still hate them."
The storm door opened again. The hinges were squeaky. When Zeke came back, he was carrying an axe.
"Do I even want to know why you—"
Rain stopped.
"No, I don't want to know why you have an axe. I can guess, and it's revolting.
Isn't that messy?"
"No, don't tell me." "Shut up and stand back."
Rain didn't move until Zeke raised the axe above his head and swung. She stepped back quickly, and he struck the frame at the height of the latch. The axe made a solid thunk, and chips of wood spat out. Zeke chopped at the frame again and again, hitting all the way around the door until the wood was reduced to a mess of shattered splinters. He broke away some dangling slivers, tossed them aside.
"Well?"
Rain reached for the doorway, pushing her fingers tentatively into the open space. When she didn't meet any resistance, she stepped forward.
Finally, let's get out of here.
Why would that even work? I said.
The rest of the room was still painted with blood. We weren't any less surrounded than we had been a minute ago.
Why are you asking me? Rain said. I don't do human magic. You could have asked our friend here, but you knocked him out before you got the chance.
What do we do about him? I said.
Brian Kerr's blue eyes stared, unblinking, at the ceiling. Rain was already walking down the hallway.
He's your mess. I don't care what you do with him.
What happened to him?
Zeke stood in the doorway, axe resting on his shoulder. Will you believe me if I tell you I have no idea? I said. Zeke took a couple of steps closer.
He's not dead.
I know. He's breathing.
Zeke looked at me.
That doesn't mean anything. You're breathing, too.
He frowned, uncertain.
You have noticed, right? That you're...
A reanimated corpse? Yes, I've noticed. I crossed my arms over my chest, suddenly, sharply self-conscious.
But almost nobody else has, and it only took you 10 seconds. How did you know?
I can tell, Zeke said.
That's a totally helpful answer. How? Do I smell or something?
A little bit. What happened to you?
I don't remember, I said. That was good enough for him. Zeke turned and walked out of the room.
You coming?
I stepped through the ruined doorway. No resistance, no pressure, no magic. It was like nothing had ever been stopping me at all. Magic was already making my head hurt, and I didn't even know anything about it yet. I was morbidly curious about the kind of house a man who kidnapped monsters might live in. I was hoping for cobwebs and draped black curtains and jars filled with pickled body parts. Cages of all sizes. Weapons, lined up and polished on display. But it was only a house. One level, 2 bedrooms, 1 bathroom. The kitchen was painfully ordinary. There were red-checked curtains on the windows, dishes in the sink, mail piled on the table. There was coffee in the pot on the counter, a mug beside it, the faint, stale scent of yesterday's brew hanging in the air. In the living room there were photographs on the mantel. I recognized Brian Kerr, younger, posing with a bunch of white guys beneath a doorway marked with Greek letters. There was a picture of Mr. Willow, too, smiling blandly, his arm hooked over a boy in a baseball uniform. I shuddered and turned away.
Check this out!
Rain was on the other side of the kitchen, standing before what would have been the formal dining room. But that wasn't what it was being used for. The room was filled with stuff. Not junk, but personal things. Clothes and coats and backpacks and shoes, kids' school bags and jackets, big purses that must have come from old ladies, briefcases and laptop bags, at least 3 suitcases that I could see, a bright green ski jacket, a 10-gallon Stetson sitting atop a pair of cowboy boots, belt and shining Texas flag buckle curled on the floor beside them, a small pink bike with streamers on the handles and training wheels, a backpack with a sleeping pad strapped to it. An empty water bottle hanging by a clip. A stuffed green turtle with a chewed ear. My throat was tight. My stomach turned queasily. These were the belongings they had taken from the people they abducted. I knew it before I saw my own things. The stolen little boy's backpack and stolen skateboard tossed carelessly to the floor. Brian Kerr's memories weren't as vivid as they had been when I first took them from him, but they were still there, just as the memories of the dead family in North Dakota still lingered at the back of my mind, and the memory of a baseball bat stained with blood and the smell of peanut butter. Once I have a murderer's memories in my mind, I have them for good. And I remembered the people Brian Kerr had taken those things from. Rain darted forward for a black sweatshirt, pulled it over her head, and stepped away,
like she was afraid something would grab her if she gave it a chance. "That is messed up," she said. I retrieved my backpack and skateboard, brought them back to the kitchen table to check the contents. My NASA notebook was still there, pen stuck in the spiral, and the handful of bills and change I had accepted from generous strangers. In the bottom of the pack was the plastic bag with the clothes I had been wearing when I died. My other clothes were there as well, the ones I had stripped off and shoved into the washer at Mr. Willow's farmhouse. They smelled faintly of detergent. Somebody, probably Violet, had folded my jeans and shirt and put them in the pack, along with my damp shoes in a plastic grocery bag. Rain and Zeke were poking around the house, opening doors and peering into closets, so I went looking for the bathroom. I stripped off Violet's dress, ran water in the sink to scrub the blood off my hands and body. I dressed again in the two long jeans and Wonder Woman t-shirt, and I wrapped the scarf around my neck to hide the bruises. I was going to leave the ruined dress in a heap on the floor, but I changed my mind and stuffed them into the pack. Everything I knew about magic came from Harry Potter and Sonny's repeated viewings of Wizards of Waverly Place, but I remembered the young man who had bled out onto the mattress, taking so very long to die. That was enough for me to suspect that leaving a large quantity of my blood lying around might not be the best idea. I left the bathroom and walked into the middle of an argument. "We have to tell someone," Rain was saying. "You don't get it. You weren't here."
"So tell someone," Zeke said. "Tell whoever you want. I don't care. Just leave me out of it."
"Stop being such a coward. What do you think she's going to do?"
"I don't care. I'm not going."
"Going where?" They both looked at me, taking in my changed clothes, the backpack over one shoulder. I held tight to the wheels of the skateboard. Sunlight slanted through the kitchen door in a bright triangle. There was a broken window beside the door, a scattering of glass on the floor. I pushed down the urge to run past them and get outside. Keep running until I found a road, until the house disappeared over the horizon. "We have to tell people about these men," Rain said. "Tell them what they're doing. I can go, but I want you to come with me. You met them too."
I could see the dining room behind Rain, but I didn't want to look at it. There was a yellow baseball cap on the floor, dirty, bill dented in a line down the center. A crying little girl had worn it over her braids. Her skin had been more green than pink, her tongue oddly long when she screamed, and her eyes were bright, unnatural spots of light. Brian Kerr had killed her. I nodded numbly. "Yeah, I can do that." Zeke started to say something, stopped, and Rain let out an exasperated sigh.
"What the hell is your problem?"
After a moment, Zeke said,
"I don't think it's a good idea for her to go to a magician."
His eyes flicked toward me when he said her, and he said magician the way most people would say maggot. Rain laughed. She reached out to muss his hair. Zeke flinched away.
"What's the matter? Afraid you'll be grounded for visiting the big bad witch in the woods?"
Zeke crossed his arms over his chest. It made him look like a little kid being scolded by an angry teacher.
"It's not a good idea."
"Why isn't it a good idea?" I asked. They ignored me. Rain's smile turned mean. "I can't believe you're scared of Ingrid. She helped you."
"She's human. She's a magician."
"Just because you're racist against humans doesn't mean they're all bad," Rain said.
She reached for Zeke's arm, and this time he shoved her back against the counter.
"Touch me again and I will break your arm," he said.
Rain held both of her hands up, palms out, a mocking surrender.
"That's why everybody loves schools so much. All those good manners and social graces.
We'll go without you if you're going to be like that. Just take us back to Boulder. I'll find somebody else to drive us."
Zeke shook his head firmly.
"No."
He looked at me, looked away quickly.
No, what? No, you're not going to drive us to Boulder?
I'm not...
Whatever Zeke was going to say, he changed his mind mid-sentence.
Fine. Whatever. Let's go talk to the crazy hippie witch. It's your funeral.
That's okay, I said quietly. I never got one the first time around.
I knew it, Rain said. I knew you weren't breathing.
Zeke said to me,
That's why you shouldn't go to Ingrid. You're...
I'm what?
Interesting, he said. She'll think you're interesting.
It was the same thing Rain had said earlier. Interesting like a two-headed calf, like a bug under a microscope, like an infectious disease.
Oh, that's great.
Rain let out a barking laugh.
He's worried about you.
How sweet.
That is messed up, even for a ghoul. Ingrid won't hurt you.
She's not like that.
This asshole doesn't know her like I do.
Zeke only shook his head. I didn't think I was going to like being the kind of interesting everybody kept telling me I was. Mr. Willow had said of the unseen mother, She will be so happy to see you. But interesting also implied this woman might know something about what I was. I didn't have any place I could go, didn't have anybody I could go to. All I had was a lot of questions. I could think of a few things I might want to ask a witch. That's a very human thing to do, I told myself. Ask questions, poke at a mystery. Look for the truth.
Trying to learn everything we can about the universe we live in is the most fundamental human endeavor,
Karen Garrow had said in one of her science shows, and her voice had been filled with awe. I could do that. I could be fundamentally human and try to understand what was going on. It wasn't much of a plan, but it was all I had.
Okay, I said. Yeah, let's go.
Zeke turned and stomped out the door, axe in hand.
Well, come on, Rain said. I still don't want you touching me. But I'm not going to miss it when you finally put two and two together and start thinking about his diet.
I need the laugh. Chapter 20. I thought about it in the 30 seconds it took for me to walk from the house to the truck, which was a black, beat-up piece of junk that didn't look like it had very many miles left in it. On the windows of the bed topper, somebody had written, Wash me, in the opaque dirt, and somebody else had replied, Bite me. I was digging in my backpack for my heart-shaped sunglasses, and I was thinking, Right, okay, ghouls are real too. I'm pretty sure I learned all about them in one of my old Goosebumps books. Something about graveyards. Lurking in graveyards. I remembered that much.
Oh, I said. I stopped 10 feet from the truck.
Rain snickered.
What's your problem? Zeke said through the open door.
I said. And Rain's snicker turned into a full laugh. Zeke started the truck and put it into gear.
You don't smell appetizing. He said. You're not that dead.
That is not as reassuring as you think it is, I said.
Are you coming or not?
We were in the middle of nowhere. There was yellow prairie grass in every direction, a few distant houses along a dirt road, and dusty blue mountains on the horizon, still tipped with snow. The house sat alone at the end of a long driveway, without even a barn or a shed to keep it company. There was a soft-topped jeep parked outside. Not the best vehicle to use if you had to truss up people you'd kidnapped and drive them around. But maybe Brian Kerr had a system. Unless somebody drove right up to the house, they wouldn't see the broken window. They wouldn't have any reason to look inside and find the red bedroom with the boarded-up windows and the man lying on the floor like a discarded doll. The sun was crawling higher and the day was already warm. The air dry and sharp. I got into the truck. Chapter 21. We drove east first, then south toward Colorado. The land was empty and dry, marked by evidence of civilization in narrow strips along roads and exits. We passed through the thin outskirts of Cheyenne and turned onto the interstate. The truck was old and noisy, and it sounded like it would rattle apart if Zeke pushed it faster than 65. Shook like it, too. A deep vibration I could feel in my teeth and my bones. My side hurt constantly, no matter how I shifted or braced myself. I reached beneath my shirt to check if I was bleeding again. My fingers came away tacky with blood. I didn't know why this injury wasn't healing like the others, but I was perfectly happy to blame Lyle. Zeke was driving with one hand on the wheel, one elbow resting on the door, head propped up like he was having trouble staying awake. He was leaning away from Rain, careful not to bump her when he shifted gears. Rain said, "If you fall asleep and kill us, I'm going to be pissed." He didn't look at her. "It won't kill me, and she's already kind of dead. That leaves you, and I don't care what happens to you." It was the first thing anybody had said since we left the house. Their argument about the witch settled. They didn't seem to have a lot to say to each other. I was getting the impression they maybe didn't like each other very much. I watched the passing landscape through the window. Fields of grass turning brown for summer. Wire fences and cows. Pickup trucks rolling along the frontage roads. The day felt different from my nighttime ride across Nebraska. More exposed. Less welcoming. "All that stuff in the house," I began. I regretted breaking the silence as soon as the words were out. I didn't want to think about the scared, screaming little girl with the braids and the yellow ball cap, or the young man gasping and gurgling as he slowly, slowly died. I didn't feel guilty about Brian Kerr. I only wished I hadn't left him alive.
"What about it?"
Rain said, when I didn't go on. "It all belonged to people like us?"
"Monsters," she said.
"And there are lots of different kinds of..." I didn't want to say it. "Monsters?" Rain raised one eyebrow.
"Breezy, you can go ahead and ask if vampires are real. We won't judge you."
"Are they?" I asked.
"Not that I know of," she said. "Never met one."
"I have," Zeke said.
"Really?"
Rain looked surprised.
"You've met a real vampire?"
"Yeah, once."
"I thought they were an urban legend, like the phone call coming from inside the house,"
Rain said thoughtfully.
"Are they anything like the stories? All suave and sexy with vague European accents and bespoke suits?"
"No, they're kind of gross."
"The kid who eats human corpses for dinner is calling something else gross."
"Well, they are," Zeke said. "They're all hairy and pale. They live underground."
Rain wasn't looking at him, so she didn't see the slight twitch of his lips. He was messing with her, lying through his mostly human teeth. That made me like him a little bit more, even if he had told me I smelled like death.
"What about mermaids?"
When they both looked at me, I explained. My sister swore she saw a mermaid in Lake Michigan once. I hadn't thought of that day in years, but now I remembered it vividly. The hot summer sun, the cold lap of water, and Sunny running along the shore, shouting about the ugly green person eating fish in the lake. We had laughed at her at the time, even though she was red-faced and shaky, her lips trembling, her eyes damp. Dad had taken her hand and led her back up the beach, even after she had shaken her head and wiped her nose and insisted she didn't want to go. They didn't find anything, and by the time they came back, Dad had promised Sunny ice cream and she was laughing like she had never been scared at all.
"Mermaids," Rain said, "in Lake Michigan. I hope you got your sister's head checked out."
But Zeke said,
"There are a lot of people living in the Great Lakes. She's lucky they didn't grab her. They can be nasty. And they're cannibals."
"Pot? Kettle?"
Rain said. Zeke ignored her.
That's how they fight. Winner eats loser. People bet on the fights. The first rule of Cannibal Mermaid Fight Club is don't talk about Cannibal Mermaid Fight Club.
Rain laughed at Zeke's confused look.
You have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. You are so full of it. You've never seen a mermaid.
Zeke only shrugged.
They smell like fish.
Neither of them minded me asking questions on the theme of real or not real, so I kept at it, if only for a way to pass the time. Ghosts? Confirmed what I had already figured out from my encounter on the country road. They were real, certainly, but they didn't have a lot going on.
Werewolves?
Led Rain into a long, elaborate story about a pair of brothers she had once known, or slept with, or who had been sleeping with each other. It wasn't entirely clear. Only that it featured a smoke jumper and a park ranger, and I believed about 1/10 of it.
How about this one? I said, after the smoke jumper and the park ranger drove off into the sunset together.
What would you call somebody who looks perfectly normal but can spontaneously grow huge claws and run really fast?
Is that what happened to you, with all those scratches?
Rain asked. Yeah. What was he?
Was he hairy? Scaly? Smell like a trash dump? Red eyes?
No, he was just a guy. At least until the claws came out.
No idea, Rain said. Lots of things have claws. You're gonna have to give us more than that.
But I didn't have anything more. Only the marks Lyle had left.
What about somebody with glowing green eyes and a scream that can make people's ears bleed?
Who the hell have you been hanging out with?
Rain said.
You need better friends. Are we talking about a woman?
Yes.
She could be a banshee,
Zeke said. Rain nodded.
Sounds like it, but there aren't many of them around.
One less, now, if what Violet had been telling the truth about what Mr. Willow could do. I made the mistake of asking about fairies, and they spent 20 minutes arguing about what counted as a fairy and how they were different from sprites or elves or whatever, and whether it was even worth knowing the differences if nobody had ever seen half of the things that qualified. I was going to have to add an unknown column to my real-not-real list.
Unicorns? I said, after the fairy discussion had subsided.
Unresolved.
Rain snorted a laugh. And Zeke said, no.
He would know, Rain added. I hear they like 'em young and pure.
My next question was there on my tongue. Closer to angels, Mr. Willow had said about Esme. Esme with her animal growl and her bib and her empty stare. I wondered if she had claws too, or if Mr. Willow's help had taken them away. Closer to demons. I didn't ask. I couldn't even get a handle on monsters in this world yet. Other realms were more than I was prepared to deal with. Instead, I said, dragons?
Dragons,
Rain repeated. I sighed. This might all be worth it if dragons were real.
Chapter 22. Later. Much later. I did ask. By then, my real-not-real list was a little longer, and the unknown list on the next page was longer than both of them combined. I asked, are demons real? Zeke and I were walking through the Gold Hill Cemetery outside Boulder. It was a warm morning, cloudless and clear, just like every other Colorado summer day. The cemetery was on a hill, steeper than you would think made sense for burying coffins, surrounded by a wire fence with a gate that looked like it hadn't been closed in decades. The trees above the cemetery had been burned black by a forest fire a few years ago, but everything close to the ground was overgrown with rich green grass and bright wildflowers. Every step we took stirred up an explosion of grasshoppers. We found the headstone we were looking for tucked away in a cluster of rustling aspens. Beloved mother, who hath suffered? Died 1973. No name. No date of birth. Possessive
and dismissive. Carved in stone. Zeke had gathered up a bunch of wildflowers to put on the grave. I thought it was sweet, but I didn't want to admit that out loud, so I said, "You know there's nobody there, right? They buried an empty box. They only wanted everybody to think she was dead." I liked that there was one place in the old cemetery where I could stand and know there was nobody below me. Zeke threw one of the flowers at me. It hit me in the nose, but I caught it before it fell. Purple lupine. And I only knew that because when Sunny was little, she loved this picture book about a woman who traveled all over the world, had a lifetime of adventures, and in her old age planted flowers to make the world more beautiful. I must have read that book to Sunny about a dozen times, and we all had to endure her brief but fervent backyard gardening phase that followed. I twirled the flower between my fingers. Are they? Are demons real?
Is this the unicorn thing again?
Zeke asked. Just so you know, I still don't believe you about unicorns, I said, because I knew it would make him roll his eyes, which was almost as good as a laugh. I will always believe unicorns are real. They're pretty and sparkly, and their horns are made of pure joy. But they only appear for people who aren't jerks. That's why you'll never meet one.
Neither will you, Zeke said. I stuck my tongue out. The most mature comeback I could manage.
Tell me about demons. You know, demons from hell that possess people. Black eyes and pea soup and crab walks. The whole deal. Are they real?
No such thing. They're just a stupid human story, Zeke said.
It was what I expected him to say, but he surprised me by continuing.
There's no one monster that's like that, but there are a lot that humans would probably call demons, including you.
And you.
But they're just people. They're not different. They're not from somewhere else.
Not from hell, you mean?
Wherever.
Zeke dismissed it with a quick shrug. The word had no meaning to him. Monsters are the least superstitious people I've ever met.
It's just a story. Humans always like to blame everything on invisible monsters from an invisible world.
Zeke turned away from the grave and started walking again, not down toward the car but up the hill, farther into the cemetery. When we had first set foot through the gate, half an hour ago, I had asked him if he felt anything, and he had shrugged and said,
"It's quiet. Peaceful."
"What about angels?" I asked.
"Same thing. What's the difference?"
It was the difference between people who were cruel and people who were kind, between stories about evil and stories about good. But maybe in his mind that wasn't much of a difference at all. "How do you know?" I asked.
"Because that's how humans are," he said.
He said it the way a marine biologist might say, "Because that's how giant squids are. Curious and knowledgeable, but observing an alien species from the outside." There was a little voice in the back of my mind, an angry stage whisper that said, "I am human. I know how we are." But I knew the difference between the truth and a lie, even inside my own head. And I knew he was right. I was asking because there was a part of me that still wanted to assign away blame. A part that still wanted to believe all of this, the magic and the monsters. It was all something apart, something not merely hidden but separate from the world I had known before. Zeke was quiet a moment before he said,
"You don't believe in that stuff, do you?"
"No," I said. I didn't have to think about it. Heaven or hell, clouds and harps or fire and brimstone. I knew which list those kinds of afterlife belonged on. "I know it's not real," I said, "and if anybody should know, it's me." I watched the Gold Hill grasshoppers flinging themselves this way and that, all around the overgrown gravestones and charred trees. Violet had said the darkness was inside me. She was wrong. "Not bigger, but brighter," I said to myself. At Zeke's look, I explained, "It's something Sally Ride said once. She was the first American woman to go into space. Not the first woman ever. That was Valentina Tereshkova in 1963. It took the Americans 20 more years to get a woman up there. That was Sally Ride.
Is she one of your dead astronauts? He asked.
They're not my dead astronauts, I said. So maybe being dead myself hadn't stopped me from talking about my dead heroes all the time. But at least Zeke didn't tell me it was morbid like Melanie used to. And no, I mean, yes, she's dead, but she died of cancer, in her 60s. Not in space. But somebody asked her once in an interview about what it was like, and she said, "The stars don't look bigger, but they do look brighter." I looked up at the blue sky and squinted in the brilliant sun. Zeke had never asked. I had never told anybody before. "That's all I can remember about that whole year," I said. It was dark and cold and empty. But there were stars. It was too lonely to be heaven. And there wouldn't be stars in hell. Chapter 23. We drove into Boulder from the north. Busy midday traffic surrounded us. A sprawl of stores and parking lots and restaurants strung along busy streets. Buses lurching from stop to stop. Cyclists hunched over handlebars in the bike lanes. At a stoplight, Zeke took out his phone, made a call, and left a short message.
"Taking Rain to Ingrid's. Won't be long."
After he hung up, Rain said, "I can't believe you. Nothing's going to happen. Ingrid's not stupid enough to do anything to you." Zeke was watching the road, not looking at us.
"It's not me I'm worried about," he said.
Rain opened her mouth, seemed to think better of it, and kept quiet. We turned west and left the city behind, climbed into the mountains, past the dam and reservoir at Nederland, straight through town and out the other side. I grew more nervous with every mile. Mr. Willow and Brian Kerr had left me wary of people who lived in remote locations. About 20 minutes outside Nederland, Zeke turned off the highway and onto a narrow dirt road that skirted the edge of a thick pine forest, following a broad valley ringed by snow-spotted mountains. We turned again, this time onto a driveway that climbed through the trees before winding down a low ridge and into a gentle bowl of a valley. Tall, shaggy animals grazed in a pasture. Llamas or alpacas? I didn't know the difference. They ignored us. The driveway led to a house and a red barn surrounded by a wooden fence. A speckled gray horse nosed at tufts of grass in a corral. The house itself was small and old, a genuine log cabin of rich, ruddy wood, with a stone chimney at one end and a long porch stretched across the front. It was a beautiful scene, sunny and bright beneath the deep blue sky, the mountains so close and so clear. It could have been from a postcard. "Greetings from colorful Colorado. Wish you were here." All I could think about was how far I would have to run to get away. The gate was open, but Zeke stopped before pulling through. "You're not even going up to the house?" Rain asked.
"No."
"What the hell did you do to piss her off?"
"Nothing. I said I'd bring you here. You're here."
The house looked so pretty and idyllic, that quaint cabin huddled down in the blue mountains and green pastures. There was a hummingbird feeder hanging on the porch and a wind chime on the opposite side, both swaying slightly in a breeze not quite strong enough to make the bells ring. If I had to imagine what a witch's house would look like, that wouldn't have been it. There definitely wouldn't have been alpacas.
"Look, don't listen to this idiot," Rain said to me. "Ingrid's fine. She's like a liaison between all the different people around here. Monsters like us, magicians like her, people who aren't either but know about both, right?"
"Right," I said. "So now there were human monster liaisons, too. It would probably be weird to ask for her resume."
"And all she wants is information." "That's not all she wants."
Rain elbowed Zeke in the side without looking at him. "Yes, it is. But she has to keep things fair. She doesn't want to owe anybody. So you tell her what you know about Willow and his people, and she'll let you ask her something in return.
That's how it works.
It's bullshit, Zeke said. She just made that up and people are stupid enough to go along with it.
Oh my God, shut up, Rain said. You're too much of a pussy to even drive through the gate. Nobody cares what you think. Seriously.
She poked my shoulder and indicated the door.
Let's go. Don't worry about it.
What kind of something do I get to ask? I could think of 200 or 300 or 500 questions I might have.
Something important. That's what you have, so that's what you get.
That's it? It sounded suspiciously like the sort of arrangement a fairy tale king would be tricked into agreeing to right before losing his entire kingdom to a conniving sorceress.
She won't hurt you, Rain said. No matter what this idiot says.
She's not like that.
She is with some people, Zeke said.
Rain made a frustrated sound.
Why are you being such an ass? She's not...
There she is. She nudged me in the side again.
Go on, get out.
The woman who stepped onto the porch was dressed in jeans and a blue t-shirt, with wire-rimmed glasses perched on her nose, and her long gray hair pulled into a braid over her shoulder. She lifted one hand in a wave and started walking toward us. Rain headed down the driveway to greet her. I moved to follow, but Zeke stopped me with a touch on my arm.
Don't give her anything that belongs to you.
His voice was low, too quiet for Rain to hear.
Like what? I don't have anything.
Whatever she asks for, don't give her anything. Hair or skin or whatever.
She's going to ask for my hair? I said, skeptical. That's not creepy or anything.
Why?
Because you're...
He gestured at my face.
Whatever you are, and she's a magician.
The duh, obviously, was implied by his tone.
She'll ask for something. Don't give it to her.
Not even information?
What? No, that's fine. You can talk to her.
Okay. No locks of hair. Only talking.
And don't accept anything she offers, Zeke said. Nothing. Even if it seems harmless. Even if she says she can't help you otherwise. Do you understand?
Rain and the woman met on the driveway, and they embraced.
Yes, I said. But why?
She can't do anything to you if you're just talking to her, Zeke said,
still speaking quietly and quickly.
It's not...
He searched for the right word.
It's not binding. She just lets people think it is because they're too stupid to know better. But if you give her anything, or take something from her...
What? What can she do?
I don't know,
he admitted.
But if I were you, I wouldn't want to find out. Don't trust her.
Ingrid hooked her arm through Rain's, and together they walked up the driveway. In spite of her gray hair, Ingrid's skin was smooth, crinkling only in lines around her eyes.
Does your brother know you're here?
She asked.
Yes, Zeke said.
You'll have to tell him I said hi.
Ingrid turned her steel-gray eyes to me. Her voice was rich and deep, and she spoke with a faint accent. German, maybe, but she had been in the United States for a long time.
What have you brought me, Rain?
This is Breezy, Rain said. Breezy, this is Ingrid Schultz.
I nodded. Nice to meet you. Ingrid slipped her arm free of Rain's. I tensed as she approached. She was a tall woman, a full head taller than me, and every instinct in my body was telling me to make myself small and unnoticeable. She didn't do anything so obvious as sniff or walk around me in a circle, but there was something sharp and assessing in her gaze. Her friendly smile vanished. She stepped back.
You should come inside. This might take a while. Not you, she said to Zeke. You stay out here.
She returned to the house. Rain glanced at me, shrugged, and together we followed. Chapter 24
Please take a seat, said Ingrid.
She gestured to a sagging sofa.
Would you like something to drink?
No, thank you, I said.
Are you sure? Iced tea?
I'm sure.
After the concoction Mr. Willow had made me drink, I wasn't going to be accepting beverages from strangers any time soon.
I would love some iced tea, Rain said. I'll help you get it.
They went into the kitchen, leaving me alone. Ingrid's living room was small and cluttered, almost claustrophobic, with heavy curtains on the windows, busy patterns on folded quilts, a coat rack fat with winter parkas. A trunk served as a coffee table. It was stained with condensation rings and stacked with issues of The New Yorker and The Economist. There was a black wood stove at one end of the room, firewood piled beside it. In a corner leaned a bookshelf jammed with hardbacks and photo albums on all shelves except one, which was crowded with dusty jars and bowls of what looked like potpourri. I leaned in to smell an open bowl. I was only a few inches away before I realized the bowl wasn't filled with dried flowers at all. They were beetle shells, shiny and black behind the curve of the glass. The floorboards creaked as Rain and Ingrid returned. Rain dropped into an armchair by the window, and Ingrid sat on the sofa.
Have a seat. She patted the cushion beside her.
I stepped around the wooden trunk and perched on the edge of the sofa, as far as I could be from her without making it obvious. I expected her to ask me about myself, where I had come from or where I was going, and I was piecing together another patchwork girl in my mind, a weak story I didn't expect her to believe. But Ingrid didn't care about any of that.
Now, she said, tell me what you are.
Dead, I said. Sort of. Rain coughed through her swallow of iced tea.
Fascinating. How long have you been dead?
Ingrid asked, a small smile playing on her lips. What's the date today? I asked.
June 27th.
A year and 17 days. You can't tell just by looking at me?
Should I be seeing an aura? A magical pulse? No, there is nothing so obvious as that.
It had been obvious to Zeke, but at least she wasn't telling me I smelled dead.
Have you been aware all this time? Ingrid asked.
Not exactly. I didn't want to tell her about my stars.
Do you remember how you died?
No. The bruises around my neck were hidden under the scarf. She didn't believe me.
Not at all?
According to the news reports, nobody had seen me leave the party. Nobody had seen anybody suspicious hanging around. No older guys, no drug dealers, no vagrants. Nobody who looked like they didn't belong with a bunch of high school kids engaging in relatively harmless underage drinking. No strange cars or vans lurking on neighborhood streets. No calls on my phone. Nobody had seen anything. There were statistics about missing teenagers at the end of some of the articles. I hadn't realized before how many people disappeared every year and never returned. No bodies, no tracks, nothing. They just vanished. I remembered slipping on the damp grass with Melanie as we walked toward Nate's house. I remembered the loud music, the bass line heavy in my chest, and laughter as the front door opened, the hot, crowded living room and bright light from the kitchen, the blue margarita mix splattered on white tile thanks to somebody who had turned on the blender without its lid. I remembered the open glass doors to the yard, Christmas lights on the trees and hedges, and Melanie telling me that Jania had done that, obviously, not Nate. Because Nate would never decorate for a party, but he would let his girlfriend string up lights if she wanted to. I remembered the taste of beer, cold at first and lukewarm later. The smooth feel of the plastic cup. Warm bodies jostling my bare shoulders. I remembered Melanie snort laughing at something I said, and the way she tugged her hair over her shoulder and twisted it up. The small hairs at the back of her neck damp with sweat. I remembered the harsh light of the bathroom and my own reflection in the mirror. The red mark on my face and a sting I felt deeper than my skin. And the dizzy feeling of being just beyond tipsy. The muddle of disappointment and embarrassment. Tears gathering in my eyes and... No, I said. I curled my fingers into fists. I don't. I imagine it was a pretty traumatic experience.
I waited, expecting more questions. But Ingrid only looked at me, sipped her tea, and looked. I grew more and more uncomfortable as the minutes ticked away. Beneath the fresh air flowing through the open windows and the spicy scent of the herbs growing in pots, there was an old stale smell in the room, something dusty and faint. It reminded me of playing hide-and-seek with Meadow in our grandmother's attic. I turned away from Ingrid's steady gaze and glanced around the room, but I looked back after a moment. If this was meant to be a trade for information, I wanted to know what she was going to offer. I asked, "Do you know what I am?"
"Do you?"
she replied. In her chair by the window, Rain laughed. "She doesn't know much." "I ruled out zombie," I said. "I'm not craving any brains, and nothing has rotted off yet." Ingrid was unamused.
"This is not a game."
"I always thought that when people died, they stayed dead," I said. I didn't know what she wanted me to say. "Except in comics. Nobody except Uncle Ben stays dead in comics." She set her glass down.
"They do, usually. Your situation is unusual, but not entirely unheard of. Normally one finds creatures like you in epidemics or war zones, where there is a great deal of death. And even then it is exceedingly rare. Did Rain explain to you how this works?"
I glanced at Rain. She said it's a trade. Information for information.
"Do you have something to offer?"
"Yes," I said.
"Something valuable?"
I hesitated. Thought about the room painted in blood, the discarded belongings, the church on the prairie. "Something dangerous."
"Very well."
Ingrid stood to light two candles by the window. A heady, sweet scent filled the room.
"I believe I can help you understand a little about what you are, with Rain's help, if she's willing."
"Sure," said Rain. Ingrid sat again and said to me,
"You're here because you were murdered. That's how unnatural things like you come to exist."
Now I was an unnatural thing. So much for Rain's chimps and humans comparison. I wondered if unnatural thing was a step up or a step down from freaky bitch. Ingrid went on.
"Nobody who dies a natural death, or a peaceful death, comes back as a revenant. Do you know what that means?"
"Not really."
"Revenant is a word that has both quite a lot of meaning and very little. It only means that you've returned."
"Accurate," I said. I refrained from telling her I had figured that out on my own. "What does that mean? Have you met somebody like me before?"
"I haven't, no," she said. "Few people have. You are a very rare creature."
"But why? Why did I come back?"
"Is that really what you want to know?"
Yes, that's really what I want to know. I wasn't even sure what to ask. Did I do something? Did somebody else do something? Ingrid looked disappointed.
"There are no good answers to those questions. Not that you would understand. It is no small feat of magic to bring the dead back to life."
"But somebody knows how to do it? Do you know how to do it? To make something like me
a monster," Rain said.
I glared at her. "People get killed all the time and don't come back. Something must have happened."
"Indeed, something must have."
Ingrid leaned back in the sofa.
"Can you bleed?"
"Can I, what?"
"Bleed," Ingrid said. "If I cut you, will you bleed?"
Oh, yes.
"I would like some of your blood."
I started to ask her why, stopped, and shook my head. "No."
"No?"
"No."
"What did the ghoul tell you I was going to do with it?"
Rain snickered. I'm sure it was good, whatever he said. I said,